Thank you for joining Extra Credit. This episode was recorded on November 4th. All data referenced reflect information available as of that date.
Welcome to Extra Credit, S&P Global Ratings U.S. Public Finance Podcast with Lisa Schroyer, a biweekly series that makes municipal market analysis mobile. Listen in as Lisa highlights S&P analysts' perspective on major public finance issues.
Hello, and welcome to Extra Credit. This week's theme is credit conditions, looking at the bigger picture of the economy and how it could impact the credits we care about. So today, my guests are Beth Ann Bovino, you may know her as S&P Global Ratings' chief U.S. economist, and Jane Ridley, a frequent guest and fellow local government sector leader with me. Both Beth Ann and Jane are members of our Credit Conditions Committee, which we use to bring you quarterly information on the economy, and each time with a slightly different angle. So the angle today is to start with Beth Ann and find out about U.S. growth and discuss the likelihood of recession. Then we'll take it to states and local with Jane. So Beth Ann, we're going to start with you and growth. Has the forecast for U.S. growth slowed? And if so, what's driving that?
Sure. Yes, it has slowed. We had actually expected that 2018 was the peak for the expansion, where it came in at around 3%, and we see it slowing down a bit, closer to 2%, at 2.3% this year, and then under 2% next year. Now, part of that is just that the expansion is slipping into the late stage of a business cycle. Usually in a late phase, you start to see slowing GDP growth and profit growth, usually amid central bank tightening or financial stress. Unfortunately, after that comes recession, and then the party starts again. What's slowing it down this time? We're seeing the Fed had earlier increased rates four times last year, which increased borrowing cost. And then, of course, the escalation of trade tensions increased costs and amplified uncertainty over the business outlook. But I don't want to just leave it there. We have seen some resilience in the U.S. economy. One of the factors behind that is that we've seen a relatively strong household spending, which has been supported by strong job market and a healthy balance sheet. That's helped to offset that business slowdown, which we think will likely continue into next year.
All right. So what about the chance for a recession? 30 to 35% chance for recession over the next 12 months. And that's more than twice the level it was a year ago. But it's still not as high, I think, as it could be. So maybe you could talk about what we've seen over the past year that's made it rise and what might tip it over to actually occurring.
A lot of it is coming from the international side of things. U.S. headwinds have certainly increased. It's been tied to international trade tensions, bordering on trade war, heightened political geopolitical risks as the UN, the U.S.-Iran dispute festers, and all amidst government dysfunction in the United States, and I guess abroad as well, as, for example, if you take the U.K. Move towards Brexit. What you have pointed out, that business cycle barometer that we do quarterly, it has certainly increased recession risks. We do a kind of an augmented term spread index, which estimates the risk of recession over the next 12 months. And as you pointed out, that's close to 35%. And it's uncomfortably close to this 40% threshold, which has historically correctly signaled recession in the past. Now, of course, correlation does not mean correlation is not causation, and there's a lot of things that could turn things for the better. But again, it is certainly a concern. Another thing that we look at is we look at 10 leading indicators of near-term economic growth, which indeed also indicates a dramatic slowdown. In our most recent readings, out of 10 leading indicators near-term economic growth, three indicators remain positive, four neutral, and three negative. To put that in perspective, last November, seven were in positive territory and three were neutral. Again, a little bit of a concern. And finally, one other worry that we have is that we've seen most recently, after our earlier analysis, we've seen that sentiment indicators have gone more contractionary, particularly on the manufacturing side. A lot of that is thanks to the trade wars, but we've seen manufacturing ISM sentiment now in contraction territory, with its employment index also in contraction territory, now suggesting manufacturers could very well plan to shed jobs. The service sector had remained relatively immune to international tensions. They're usually driven by the domestic side of things. And given that the domestic economy makes up about 85% of overall overall economic activity, that suggests the U.S. could withstand all these trade disputes. However, we've recently seen soft ISM services sentiment readings, with the services employment sub-index getting closer to that 50-point threshold as well. That raises concerns that the trade-related weakness is starting to filter into the service sector. Not a good sign.
Okay, and I had promised that I wasn't going to make any economist jokes, but when you say that 40% is close to where we typically have a recession, does that mean that for economists, 40% equals 95 to 100%? Okay, so just to take it to the next step, I guess we talked a lot about some of the sentiment indicators being negative. Is it possible that there are any bright spots in the economy? And what's the good news? Is there any?
Sure. Don't give up on the consumer, I guess, is the point here. After cleaning up their balance sheets, household financial conditions are in relatively good shape. Moreover, the jobs market has been very, very tight, giving people fatter paychecks to spend at the mall. Indeed, the strength of the U.S. economy, whether someone will buy a home, take a vacation, or shop at the mall, depends on jobs. And with more jobs with higher wages, people have more reason to spend. We've also seen though international trade tensions are higher amidst a global slowdown, about 85% of U.S. economic activity is driven by the domestic activity, which is getting a boost from the stronger jobs market. Moreover, the Fed has also cut rates three times this year to help cushion the blow from trade tensions. That helps reduce borrowing costs and indeed might make it a little bit easier for households to spend on the dotted line for a new home.
So Bethann and Journey say, don't stop believing in the consumer. Great. Thank you. All right. Let's take it to the local. What do you generally look for when you look at Bethann's lens or look through Bethann's lens to take a closer look at munis? How's it looking?
Well, Lisa, so of course, everything Bethann and our economic forecast covers is useful to public finance in one way or another. But there are some things that really have a much closer tie to our analysis. And one of those things is housing growth, as we've been talking about. And that's particularly important for property tax dependent local governments that we cover in USPF. So there have been some mixed messages on housing indicators over the past couple quarters. But this most recent housing starts and permit data for Q3 is really showing a clear uptick. And as Bethann mentioned, that rate cut helps as well. So, but when we look at the projections for growth, they're not equal across the board. It's really being led by the southern U.S., where the majority of the states are seeing increases and in some cases double digit. But all regions except the Pacific have had at least one state that's projecting pickup in housing starts. So one of the other macro effects we look at is major federal policy decisions that haven't impacted the local level. And right now, as Bethann talked about, obviously, is China tariffs. So we haven't seen a clear impact on credit quality from the tariffs, but so far with about $150 billion in tariffs on personal goods that are supposed to go on in December holiday season, some consumer goods are going to start costing more. And although we continue to see that strong consumer demand with the wage growth and low unemployment rates, there's always the concern that with higher prices, there'll be a bigger hit on personal budgets, and that could have a ripple through impact on sales tax collections.
All right. So obviously, all things here are intertwined. And one of the things we talked about was, in Bethann's forecast, an increased chance of recession. I know for a lot of the credits that I'm covering, there's some scenario building on what could happen in general. How are state and local governments looking?
Well, things are looking good despite those rising indicators for recession. State revenues in 2019 are up over 2018, and the 2020 projections remain strong too. And that's helping states project that reserves should be up or at least flat in 2020. That's clearly very good for state credit quality. And as states go, so go locals. So with strong state revenues supporting a healthy economy, that also means there's less chance for any kind of reduction in revenue sharing or school aid payments to locals. But of course, we're always looking for some kind of indication that the cycle is starting to turn, especially when the recession probability is ticking up. And in the case of state and locals, we often see the most clear indicator for any kind of downturn is coming from lower sales taxes. So we'll be watching for that. We're also looking for increases in Medicaid enrollment, where we see more people needing assistance. And those are probably two of our best indicators that the economy may be starting to weaken at the local level.
Okay, and then the piece also highlights that you wrote on credit conditions, the different regions across the U.S. So can you tell us, also first tell us the title so that everyone can make sure to get it, and then tell us more in depth how the regional growth is changing and what do we see?
Well, the title of the piece, Lisa, that came out last week is "In the Midst of Mixed Economic Signals, U.S. State and Local Credit Quality Remains Strong." To go back to the housing topic, the gangbusters housing growth we've seen in some parts of the country, particularly in the West, is starting to wane a little bit. And as I mentioned, housing starts in the South are going strong, but are down in New England as well as the Mountain region. And those projections look out further to 2021 to get a little bit longer term view. And I want to talk about Mountain, not because I live here, but because they're starting to see some shifts in growth that are interesting. And as you might expect, there are variations across any region. And in Mountain, Arizona and New Mexico are both projected to be continuing to grow in terms of housing starts. So it's Colorado that isn't adding a lot more homes. And this slower housing growth in some areas doesn't necessarily mean that GDP is falling or GSP for these states. That really remains on the rise across the region, which is probably a good thing because at least here in Colorado, there's still a lot of housing demand, which will likely push home prices up.
All right. Well, this has given me a lot to think about as I snack on the rest of my Halloween candy this afternoon. And Jane, I know that you were also partaking of your kids' candy to help you through your writing process. So I've estimated an increased likelihood of cavities to about 55, which in Lisa Schroyer's scale is not at all predictive of actual results. So thank you both for participating and giving us these keen insights that can help us understand what our muni markets are facing. So let us know if you have any questions or feedback, USPF feedback@spglobal.com. If you yourself have any good dad jokes, please send them along. Maybe we can share them. I'm your host, Lisa Schroyer. Until next time.
To subscribe to this podcast, or if you're interested in any of our written analysis, head to spratings.com/US Public Finance. This has been Extra Credit, S&P Global Ratings U.S. Public Finance Podcast with Lisa Schroyer, making municipal market analysis mobile.